This is Leo Bebeau for KTWH. We are doing our weekly update of all the news features that are going to be appearing in this week's North Shore Journal. And we have Kitty Mayo, writer for the journal, on the line with us this morning. How are you doing on this beautiful last day of September, Kitty?
Hi, Leo. I'm great.
Excellent. So we have before us in this very sunny concluding day of the month, some cloudiness kind of in our midst with the ongoing COVID, I'll call it a surge, that I think we'd agree is probably very attributable to the Delta variant coming and visiting and staying too long here. We've had 107 new cases this month of September. And the lead story we were going to talk about is a story on updating us on COVID. How does your story unfold this week, Kitty?
Thanks, Leo. So I think the most interesting thing is that we have the highest new case count in northeastern Minnesota since the end of 2020 in this region, including Lake County. I guess I want to point out that while case counts are very high in our region right now, very high, this is indeed a surge. There is no question about it. The data reflects that very clearly. We're following a trend that we've seen across the world and the country, and we're learning things. I guess I have been taking some comfort in being able to see some patterns in when there's a new variant and how that emerges. And we tend to be, since the beginning, we tend to be sort of the last on the map to light up. And so I guess I've been saying for many months that the Delta surge was coming to the North Shore, and it is now here, and we are in the thick of it. So you might see national headlines telling you that the surge is passing, waning, reducing, even in some parts of Minnesota. That is the case, but not where we live, Leo. And it's really important for people to understand that things are bad out there, that they need to take extra precautions to protect themselves. And masking, vaccination, of course, is number one. But even for those vaccinated, we're wise to mask when we're with other people, especially in public, to slow this spread down. The hospitals in our region continue to be at maximum capacity or beyond from my contacts that I have in those places. That means that if you have any health issues that need medical attention in an emergent situation, you may not get the level of health care that you would normally expect because there's not enough people to help us with that, is what it boils down to. So these are some kind of scary things to share, but I think really important for the public to know about so they can take precautions necessary to avoid being in a bad situation or contributing to clogging up the healthcare system, burdening it more. The other thing I would like to touch on is what's happening at the Lake Superior School District. Despite the fact that we're seeing numbers for case rates at 73, and this is per 10,000, 73 cases per 10,000 in Lake County during September 12th to September 25th. So I'm going to kind of say that again so people know, can catch all those numbers. The safe return to school plan for the Lake Superior School District indicated there were certain trigger numbers that would cause them to require masking in students, and then higher numbers than that for the region's numbers would trigger distance learning, and they had a really nicely laid out plan. The previous 14-day case count was high enough to trigger distance learning, and now this most recent one is even much higher than that. Nonetheless, I've been told directly by the superintendent of the schools, J. Bell Castro, that they are only requiring elementary students to wear a mask at this time. So the decision has been made not to move on to the next levels of protection from COVID spread at the school district.
At the radio station, we've reached out to Mr. Bel Castro, school superintendent, as well. He says we're going to be getting a written statement kind of update later today, so I'm eagerly awaiting that. But what's truly unique is the existing protocol was done well in advance so that they'd be prepared with a plan. So we're really trying to understand what process of review has led them to not follow the path that they had already set out, especially in terms of simply masking at the high school level.
Which is not being required at this time, only recommended.
Correct.
So there is some confusion there. I mean, I think you highlight that very clearly. There's confusion in what the decision was made at the beginning of the school year, a very apparently well thought out plan that had very specific steps and processes to follow should case counts get to certain levels. Those case count levels have far exceeded far, far, far exceeded any of those trigger points. And yet the only response we're seeing from the school board at this point is required masking for elementary students. Of course, some of classes in which there have been COVID exposures are in quarantine. I don't know at this time exactly how many. I haven't been given those numbers, but there are some of those happening right now.
And that's the data we were awaiting. And Jay Belcastro was going to provide that. He was vetting some of the details with the nursing personnel. So hopefully we'll have a little bit better picture of how the numbers have played out in the different school buildings. But regardless of how many students have to date been infected, there's still the potential for many more. We have whole populations, even in the high school level, where they are eligible for vaccination, who are not vaccinated.
That is true, Leo. And I guess we wait to hear from the district how they're making those decisions. Hopefully we can get some insight into that.
Kitty, perhaps do you have any insight as to whether additional mitigating strategies have been pursued, like greater spacing? I was told by Mr. Belcastro they're doing greater spacing during lunch hours when people have to remove masks. But if you're not wearing one in the first place, that's really not much of a change. But also, for instance, a testing regime. Testing can be very helpful, but is really problematic, as at least I gathered from Greg Ruberg, the availability of tests.
Well, you hit on some really important things there. Yes, the very loosely defined attempting to increase space during cafeteria hours without any real specifics is what I understand. I don't have anything definitive more than that, as you're saying. I understand that the school has right along planned to have a strategy for testing for students. That is not yet in implementation. I do not know what the holdup on that is. Now, when you reference Lakeview and their testing capacity, is a really important piece for people to know about. If you're a parent of a student or a student yourself and you want a COVID test, you should call the school and ask them what the process is, because Lakeview has been swamped. Their phones are being tied up. Staff are being pulled away from medical care in order to try and answer questions for people that really should be going to the school, because they can only test you. And let's just go through this really quickly again so people are aware. Lakeview is not a surveillance testing site. They don't have the capacity. They don't have the funding. They don't have the tests for that. They can only test you. They only have the amount of staff and tests to test you if you have COVID-like symptoms, and they'll triage you for that, ask you a bunch of questions, see if it matches, or you have had a known exposure, high-risk exposure, to somebody who has tested positive for COVID. And that has certain parameters that, in this case, does not mean you are in a classroom with someone who tested positive for COVID. You have to have been within 6 feet of them for more than 15 minutes or more. So if you're in the back of the classroom and your teacher had COVID, you're not going to be able to get a test, because that's just more than the hospital can handle.
So at this time, we're not aware of the school being able to implement either a quick or just a regular PCR testing program.
As far as I know, they are not able to do that.
Okay.
At this time.
Well, this story continues to unfold, and we'll stick with it with you in the coming weeks, Kitty.
I would like to mention just a couple more things that are really important. Booster shots, people have a lot of questions about that. I compiled some information for people. There will also be a notice in the paper from Public Health about who qualifies, where to call, how to sign up, a lot of details in that. And then there are some upcoming clinics at Lakeview, both in Two Harbors and Silver Bay, for first, second, and booster shots of the Pfizer vaccine. It's also flu season, and people should get their flu vaccine. So there's information on this article for people on that.
Okay. Too. Well, excellent. We are announcing on the radio station a series of Wednesday clinics all through the month of October, and I believe an additional one. And those are at Lakeview, I believe, but then there is also one on October 8th, a Friday, in Silver Bay. So you can find out more at the county's website, COVID-19 vaccination page too, and in the North Shore Journal.
Correct.
And so there is some very positive news about some of our district students, specifically up at William Kelly High School, participating in the Leadership Duluth program. You want to fill us in on that, Kitty?
Yeah. So I'm going to say their names because that's fun. So it's Emma Diener, used to be Molly McLeet, now Molly Sloan. Sheena Guzzo, now Sheena Kern, are all in the current class for Leadership Duluth, which is a program I didn't know anything about, but it's a super cool deal where the Duluth Chamber of Commerce allows about 53 in this class. Really competitive. People have to apply to be in it. All these particular graduates of William Kelly went through a rigorous application process. They all work in the Twin Ports area now. And the training is, you know, it helped them become great leaders in the community with a focus on taking an active role in the health and prosperity of the area. You know, what makes a thriving, healthy community as well as a prosperous, economically prosperous one. And they have a big project to work on in terms of volunteering with a nonprofit as they develop that. So I thought that was a pretty cool thing to find out that those ladies are doing.
That is great, and great to hear that people have not gone so far away and making their mark in our region. Yeah.
Nice.
We also have information on the Veterans News, where the VA is reviewing the status of veterans discharged in the LGBTQ community. Members of the military and their discharge status is being reviewed or actually being changed?
That is a really good question. So the VA recently made an announcement just last week that lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer plus veterans that had other than honorable discharge because of their sexual orientation, and that's something that really did happen.
Indeed.
Which is shocking, are now eligible. They've always been, not always, since Don't Ask, Don't Tell era ended, right?
Yep.
Those very veterans have been able to receive benefits, but lots of them haven't tried. They haven't gone in through the review process to have that other than honorable discharge changed. So it's sort of a wake-up call announcement that, like, we as an agency, the VA, we really want to make sure you are getting the benefits that you earned through your military service, and to rectify this incorrect other than honorable discharge that you received, and make sure you are getting all of the health care benefits, all of the other benefits that you have been denied these many years. Because some veterans in the LGBTQ community had previously tried to have that change, their less than or other than honorable discharge change, and had it denied. And the VA is saying, hey, we know you're out there. Please ask again. We're going to make sure this is, you know, that justice is served here.
So
that's what that story's about.
So this is the outreach portion. This is actually something where folks need to hear about this and contact the mm-hmm. VA to proceed. So that's a critical element, is getting the word out that this is a new opportunity to get that discharge status reviewed.
Exactly. You got it.
Thank you, Kitty. And we have a sad note. I believe that you are reporting on the death of your colleague at the North Shore Journal.
That is correct. As I had mentioned last week, Kiva Black, who is the sales manager for the North Shore Journal, died on September 19th and was able to write up a piece in memorial of his service to the paper and his role in our community, a very important role, and also to me personally as a great friend for the last decade. I also wanted to mention on air that there will be a gathering, a celebration of life at the Finland Community Center on Tuesday, October 5th from 11 to 3. COVID precautions in place. Masking is recommended, and people should double check at closer to the date at the friendsoffinland.org website to see if that has been upgraded to a mask requirement. So thank you, Kiva, for all your work with us at the North Shore Journal and for the entire community.
And our deepest condolences on your loss and the loss of those you're working with at that paper and the community who knew Kiva. I didn't have the pleasure, but thanks for making sure people knew about Kiva.
Yes, thanks, Liam.
I think that's a wrap for this week. Thanks, folks, for tuning in to this review of the stories that will be appearing in the edition of the North Shore Journal that at least is in my mailbox on Friday. We will see you on the radio, Kitty. Thanks for joining us again this week.
Thanks, Leo.
Bye now. Kitty Mayo reporting with the North Shore Journal. This is Leo for KTWH.